On this episode of Healthier Workplaces, improving exposure judgment, coming up next.
The importance of industrial hygienists and OEHS professionals has never been better recognized. Safety science experts keeping workers and communities safe. A mixture of science and application. AIHA is the association that represents these professionals and what they do. Teamwork, thinking outside the box and solving unique challenges, a winning combination for healthier workplaces and a healthier world.
So welcome, Stephanie and Brent. Great to have you here on this topic of exposure assessment. And I guess I'd start by having each of you just give me a little background about yourself and your role in the field of occupational health and safety. So Stephanie, I'll let you go first on that.
Sure. Well, currently I'm a senior EHS specialist with 3M Company, where I've worked in corporate safety and industrial hygiene for almost 21 years. But prior to that, I spent about 5 years in the oil and gas utility in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and I started my career in graduate school while working for Minnesota OSHA, and I have a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering.
Great. And Brent, how about you?
So currently, I run my own consulting firm. I've been in this field for almost 30 years now. Time flies, right? So I originally started out as a mechanical engineer. I got my interest and start kind of in industrial ventilation. And then I've spent most of my career focused on industrial hygiene with some occupational safety. And I spent some years in industry in utilities and pharmaceuticals. And then the past 15 years, I've been consulting.
How has the industry and your understanding of exposure assessment and judgment evolved over the years? And I'll pose that to both of you, but Stephanie, we'll toss it your way first.
Yeah, well, Brent just said he's been practicing about 30 years, and I have as well. And I think at the beginning, you know, hygienists didn't sample things we weren't concerned about, but we didn't necessarily document those negative exposure determinations. And we were also a lot of times trying to make decisions with zero or one sample, which isn't really the best way to do that. And when I worked at the utility, we spent a lot of time in outages. So it was a lot of time working with contractors and non-routine work and implementing medical surveillance. So we tried to, we really focused all our time and attention on the things that we thought were the biggest hazards, with the, at the risk of maybe missing those things that that looked like smaller hazards to us.
Makes sense. So Brent, how about you on that?
Yeah, I'll really echo a lot of what Stephanie's saying. Certainly when I started out, which was back in the 1990s, almost all the time that I encountered someone making some kind of exposure judgment, they were using what we would call, you know, their professional judgment. You know, they were kind of eyeballing it. And even the data, when they would get it back, you know, they would eyeball it and see if it was under, you know, a safe limit and make decisions based on that. So that awareness has really improved, you know, over the past 30 years. I've seen more and more organizations adopting systematic approaches and tools to both those kind of qualitative judgments that Stephanie was talking about, and also, you know, the quantitative judgments when we get the data. So, but we still have a long way to go. A lot of the small and mid-sized organizations haven't embraced those tools yet. I mean, maybe don't know about them as much as a lot of the larger organizations, but definitely seen a lot of improvement.
I mean, was there an aha moment for you guys in your careers when, you know, that exposure assessment strategy, worked well for you, that you believe that this was really the way to go?
Well, in about 2005, we used software to manage all of our exposure assessments, the qualitative ones and the quantitative ones. So in about 2005, we built an industrial hygiene planning tool so that they could pull assessments in and sample the things that were the most important. So we really were able to help people prioritize and reduce the uncertainty around all of the exposure assessments. And that that has really been beneficial, I think, to a global understanding of why we collect industrial hygiene data and how we make good decisions.
I guess, like, the converse to that is, were there times when not following that you found in your, in you know, in your time out in the field, when not following the exposure assessment strategy wasn't working, you know, like, you know, finding yourself being out in the weeds a little bit with maybe looking at it a different way?
Yeah, sure. I'd really say that was my aha moment. It was just for me personally, early in my career, although I was aware of some of the systematic approaches that were out there and some of the statistical tools, I wasn't really using them because the organizations I was working with and the other industrial hygienists I was working with weren't really using them. Then we started to adopt that in an organization I was a part of, but the aha moment for me was I was repeatedly going back to a plant year after year and collecting some samples. And, you know, on the first few visits, I had a few samples from each of the processes that I was looking at. And I made some decisions based on that. I made some recommendations about, you know, do they need respiratory protection or do they need engineering controls? And I really kind of found that in some of the cases, I made the wrong choice. And a lot of it was, I really think it was due to two reasons. One, I was a bit overconfident in my own judgment of what I was seeing. And then also I just hadn't adopted a really good systematic approach. And some of the criteria, even though the company I was working for was implementing some new criteria, we hadn't really got it right yet. And I didn't totally have a good feel for when something was okay or not, or when I had enough information to really make a good decision. So that really opened my eyes.
Have there been any recent shifts in either awareness or even practices that maybe have influenced how either of you address exposure judgment in your workplaces? This is an evolving field, obviously. You know, looking at these issues.
I'm really excited about how we can potentially use exposure models more proactively in our practice. You know, there's a lot more modeling in Europe around some of the product stuff than there is in our day-to-day industrial hygiene work. And partly it's because, you know, generation rates are hard for people to understand or calculate. But there are some things like the checklist tool, it's structured deterministic models that was recently developed by the University of Minnesota. That's a free tool that people can use. And I think it's up to us to kind of test those things and figure out how could they be really useful in our workplaces. Like that tool can look at a specific material, one material, and if you know enough about its composition, it can estimate airborne exposure. So what might happen if you introduce this new material into your workplace? And that's really powerful for somebody that doesn't have experience with all those chemicals or understand the vapor pressures and all the other things that go along with determining whether you might or might not want us to take a look at something in a new material.
And I really agree with that. Those tools are really valuable and really underutilized. I mean, some folks are picking them up and really use them in their judgments, but not enough. And I think people need to understand those more and more and understand the need to be systematic. And something I would add too, another piece, and I think those tools are all key that Stephanie mentioned, but I think we'll also see developments in using things like real-time instrumentation and data to help advise us on where we've got issues with potential exposures in the workplace. I don't necessarily think those sorts of things will ever totally replace the more traditional industrial hygiene monitoring that we're used to, but I think the more information that we can get together and sort through and use to make calculations or models that can help us make better estimates, the better off we'll be in the long term.
So exposure judgment really is the process of continuous improvement, right? You agree on that. Are there certain practices, you know, or processes that you go through as far as training, ongoing training, or at least enhanced development to try to continually, move your process and make it better, make your process of exposure assessments more accurate and more well-defined? That's a long question, I know.
I had some thoughts about this. We try to because we've been collecting exposure assessment data internally to our company for almost 25 years. We have a lot of data to look at, but when I first started, I thought, well, that's cool. Maybe I can figure something out about welding. But then I realized that we were collecting all the welding data under welding, and we weren't segregating it by the MIG and the TIG and the shielded metal arc welding and the cutting. And I needed everybody to cut to separate it. So we had to have a specific education campaign on what is welding, why are welding different, what are the controls that different kinds of welding require, and when do we sample, and how do we separate this and create more different segs for the different types of welding that happen in our operations, so that we could understand each one separately and we could control each one appropriately.
I really like that, because you're having your folks learn from the experience that already occurred. I mean, too often we're having to kind of reinvent the wheel a little bit, even though there's a lot of information already out there. And in terms of general education, there's a lot of free education through AIHA on a lot of these tools. So that's very valuable. But I would definitely say learning your operation and the operations you're sampling and looking at the past data is perhaps just as, or maybe even more valuable.
Are there specific skills, that professionals in this area should be looking at to hone their skills and be more effective?
I think if people don't rely only on your expertise, but continue to be curious about things and to keep asking questions. You always want to understand how people do their work and what the ventilation looks like, And are they following the actual procedure, or they're doing it differently because of whatever reasons they have, and so they can, accurately figure out whether that needs some additional control or not. So, you have to be open to learning, a growth mindset, and, keep looking for PDCs that might extend your knowledge or operations that you're not familiar with to try to understand those hazards better, so that when you see them the next time, you have a sense of how they should be managed.
Makes sense. I mean, I would think, both of you have had fairly long careers, in addressing these things. And, over the course of that time, have you seen a shift in mindset of how occupational health and safety professionals address these things in the workplace? Or is it really been kind of like a more of a slow progressive evolution here?
I mean,
I've spent the last 20 years training people globally. So we really do have a large group of people in 3M that are doing exposure assessment the same way, and that are helping new people along in the process of always never saying that the exposure was above or below an OEL, of always looking at it with a statistical treatment, always, understanding the whole exposure assessment and doing the assessments before we ever collect data. So we do have a global process for that is globally understood and has been globally implemented for a long time. So I really feel like most of the people that I work with on a daily basis could easily pass the registry that AIHA has developed around exposure judgments, because it matches the process that we're using. So I'm encouraging people to look at that as a continuing improvement process to get registered for exposure decision making, because it's something that they've got a lot of practice in, and we continue to push forward.
Brent, do you have something to add on that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it's really important for every organization, particularly the large organizations, to have a systematic approach and to be speaking the same language, and you're going to be a lot more successful that way. But I also think, from my experience, there's never really going to be a one-size-fits-all approach. And and even if you look at the AIHA exposure assessment strategies, it's not necessarily designed as a one-size-fits-all. There's a lot of ways to adapt that to fit your needs. But, just give an example. I was working with one organization where they had adopted a standard where for every process they were going to collect industrial hygiene data for, they were going to collect at least 6 samples, and they wanted to have 95% confidence that the 95th percentile was under the occupational exposure limit. So I think that's something great to aspire to. And if I was wanting to, if there was a situation where there were a lot of workers exposed to something that had some pretty serious health effects, you know, I'd want at least that much data, maybe more, and that much confidence in terms of my exposures being below the limit. But it's not going to ever be feasible for all organizations to collect that much data for every scenario. And I think what happens sometimes is sometimes some organizations will set a standard like that, and they get caught chasing getting enough data to meet those criteria. And then maybe they're not sampling at all in an area that they haven't really thought about yet. So we need to be able to adapt to each organization, each scenario, each need to kind of adapt this. But we still need to have that systematic approach and that understanding of what this data really means. And we can't make a decision with one or two or often even 3 or 4 data points, depending on how much confidence we can really have in that data.
I mean, how can exposure judgments be custom tailored to individual workplace hazards or even industries in general? I mean, obviously, there's not, like I think you alluded to this, there's not one size fits all. And if you try to make a carte blanche standard of how you're gonna do these assessments across the board, you get yourself maybe cornered, not being able to adapt to an individual particular circumstance.
Well, I'll speak a little bit to it because. In a lot of cases, industrial hygienists are trying to put people into groups that they call similar exposure groups. And what I found is that works really, really well for noise, because noise is a full shift exposure that we have, you know, in places where we have noise. So it makes sense that we would have a similar exposure group across a whole shift for an agent such as noise. But we have trouble, because of the nature of our operations, having full shift chemical SEGs, because the processes that are being made it's not the same thing for the whole shift. It may alternate and have multiple. So chemical SEGs are not as common. We organize the chemical assessments around activities and shift sometimes, but not, it's not as clean as what we can do with noise.
Yeah, that makes sense. And from my perspective, I think a lot of times the criteria we're going to use has to be adapted to the situation. And you know, some folks are, you know, nervous about that, because they're like, well, okay, you know, our criteria is we need 95% confidence that the 95th percentile is under the limit. Well, you know, in many cases, we may be able to identify scenarios where there's very low potential for exposure, very few workers exposed, and maybe we're collecting data just to reinforce that belief. And in those cases, we may not need the amount of data that it would take to get 95% confidence. And then there's other scenarios, like I was alluding to before, where we have a lot of workers exposed, you know, the long-term health effects are pretty serious here, and we better have a high degree of confidence. So in my opinion, we need, again, to adapt to those different situations and to the workplace. And it's always more complicated, right, Stephanie, as you're saying. I mean, it's not usually, you know, exactly 8 hours of exposure, you know, to a particular process. Or if we're looking at a stale, rarely is it easy to identify, okay, it's just this 15 minutes.
Yeah, which 15 minutes?
So where are we sampling? And how? So we've got to adapt and think about it and be systematic and kind of when and where and how. And that's where I think some of these other tools, certainly the modeling, you know, that we were talking about before, but also real-time instrumentation. I've tried to implement more and more often as I'm collecting data on exposure to something. If it's something that's a volatile organic compound or a dust that I can somehow supplement with some real-time data and see those fluctuations, it can really help advise me in interpreting those few data points I might be starting with that maybe don't have a lot of statistical power yet, but I can have a lot more knowledge to make some decisions moving forward. Yeah, and I think we need to continue getting the word out there. You know, one thought I have is, I have two thoughts, I guess, maybe I would add. One is, and this is part of our role at, as part of the Improving Exposure Judgments Advisor Group, is how do we get the word out there? How do we get people involved with embracing these tools and using these tools? And so we're doing a lot of work around that. And so we need to continue to be creative in that regard and to continue to get the word out. So that was one thought I had that, that kind of maybe wraps this up. But another thought I had is, I think we also need to look outside of, you know, our job field and learn from things that other folks are doing. I mean, there very well could be some good things to learn from what EPA is doing with their data analysis. I think they also might have a lot to learn from us in some cases, but it goes both ways, right? And there are things going on in Europe with how they approach things that are different than how we do it here in the States. And I think we have a lot to learn from each other from those different approaches, because it might help us adapt and make our approaches not try to have that one size fits all where we're trying to do a square peg in a round hole, but we have a bigger toolbox to be able to make these decisions with.
Closing thoughts, Stephanie?
I mean, there's still a free webinar for 8 hours worth of continuing education. That's fantastic material. I know I told all of my colleagues, I said, you got to go listen to this. And if you miss anything, make sure you don't miss Paul Hewitt's section, because those are the tools that we're using. And they're, even I got some brand new ideas listening again to all of the speakers talk about statistical treatments of data. And you know, it spurs further thinking and learning about all these tools.
Yeah, and that's a really good point too. I mean, I've had several college level statistics courses. I've kind of almost made industrial hygiene statistics a hobby of mine, but I'm not a professional statistician, and I'm finding too that I'm always learning something new or finding a different perspective on something that a little light bulb will go off. So, you know, I think that's another important point, is this isn't like, you know, we're going to make a New Year's resolution and for January, we're going to use statistics with our industrial hygiene data. We need to continue to apply it and use it and learn not only from our mistakes and our successes, but just, you know, continue to see what's working and what doesn't work and what new information is out there and what new developments are out there.
Well put. Well, Brent, Stephanie, thank you so very much for joining us on this episode of Healthier Workplaces. And we'll hopefully see you in the not too distant future at an upcoming AIHA event. I'm hoping to see you at least at National, both planning on attending.
Yeah, I'll be monitoring one of Brent's events.
There you go. Perfect. <Yeah. laughs> Well, we'll be there video casting and doing a bunch of stuff. So we'll definitely cross paths. Well, Ann, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
So that's our show for this week. Until next time, I'm Bob Krell. Stay healthy.